Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Tim Stenovec on Bloomberg Radio.
Carol Masser, along with Katie Greifeld. The only reason Katie agreed to do the show is because of this segment. You can be honest.
I heard this was happening. I had to be here.
All right. It's been another nutty week. Katie was traveling. Lots of news, as you know. Markets, a little bit of some gyrations here. We know we needed to wrap up with a segment on wine. And so with us right now is Josh Green, editor-in-chief for Wine and Spirits magazine, here in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. And yes, we're going to sample some wine in a moment. But Josh, first of all, how are you?
Great to be here. I'm doing very well. It's a spring day outside.
It's
beautiful.
It feels really good. It feels really good.
I'm actually going running after this, but still, I'm here for the wine.
You could always have a little sip.
That's true.
A little extra spring in your step. Big trends in wines last year. Talk to us a little bit about this past year and how this year is shaping up when it comes to the wine industry.
Well, everyone was very nervous about the pandemic from the industry's point of view because everyone closed their tasting rooms.
Yeah.
But direct to consumer did super, super well. And so there's this phenomenon, everyone calls it premiumization.
I probably bought more wine.
Yeah, a lot of people bought more wine. And so premium wines, premiumization is increasing at a pretty stiff clip. So
what does that mean?
It means that people are buying up.
Okay.
And what's unfortunate, because the industry relies on it, is that things under $15, sales are diminishing. Huh. But things above $15 are actually on the increase. So the Silicon Valley Bank does their annual report every year.
Yeah.
And it created a lot of buzz in the industry this year because there were a number of trends that were scary for the industry.
Right.
Including this issue of baby boomers continuing to drink a lot of wine and millennials continuing not to drink a lot of wine.
All right, millennial, what's wrong with you? Are you a millennial?
I am a millennial.
Okay.
I will say the pandemic, you bought more wine. I drank a lot more wine because I was with my parents for 6 months. So I got really into white wine, for example. Mm-hmm. It used to be just red only, but my mom loves white wine. Tell me about these millennials who are not me.
Well, they are often choosing to drink spirits.
Mm-hmm.
So the baby boom generation came to wine really in the early 90s when 60 Minutes produced this segment on how red wine was good for your health. Now that's
antioxidants.
Now that's been questioned. And since it's been questioned, it also is at a time when younger people who are nesting, getting married, and that's when they usually start drinking wine, are not turning to wine as much. So they'll go out to a restaurant and they'll order cocktails, and cocktails are booming.
Mm.
And spirits are booming. So for that generation, they're choosing either not to drink alcohol or to drink alcohol other than wine.
That is so interesting. Actually, that does mirror my own life because mm-hmm. my husband, for example, he loves to cook. He also loves to make cocktails. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but for me, the pie is just getting bigger. It's not necessarily cocktails taking market
like
share from wine.
All of the above.
Yeah.
All of the below.
Yeah. So it's not really dire. I mean, people are continuing to drink wine.
Yeah.
It's just that the growth is in the above 15. So revenue was up 9.7% in that segment of the industry.
Above 15.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I do feel like we do a lot of wine segments, to be quite honest, on Bloomberg Business Week. And I do feel like we often have people who, come on and say, like, there's a range of, money you could spend mm-hmm. on wines. But there's a lot of great wines out there under $20 or under, you don't, the whole concept and this idea of you don't have to spend a ton of money to get a mm-hmm. great bottle of wine.
Well, that's absolutely true. And In fact, the boomers who are older in their 60s are buying more wine by volume, but at a lower price. And the younger people are actually buying higher priced wines to, they're sort of wine curious, they're experimenting. They're looking at things that they don't know about and trying them. And so they're willing to spend more on a wine for an occasion, but they're not drinking as much every day.
Okay.
That's really interesting.
How do you do it?
I mean, well, it does feel, when it comes to different price points, like buying something $15, I just probably don't do it. I probably buy up. And for it is more occasion based. It feels like it's not just like, oh, it's Tuesday, I'll drink wine. Like then I might actually make a gin and tonic at home. But I don't think I speak for an entire generation. So, I mean, I am curious though, when I think about my peers, I know that mocktails have seemingly become a really big trend. And you were talking about how there's this gravitation towards cocktails, but what are you seeing when it comes to non-alcoholic drinks?
We see a lot of growth in that area. And we as a magazine don't pay a whole lot of attention to that. But there is a lot of activity.
Because you're our wine and spirits.
Because we're wine and spirits and we don't really cover non-alcoholic stuff.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of activity, even among wineries, to produce lower alcohol wines and no alcohol wines. And there's also, you know, in terms of dry January, curious sober, sober curious people,
those are terms I hear all the time now.
And you never heard them
curious
5 years.
Sober curious. Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole trend on TikTok.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Tim Stanovec, who's my normal co-host, my abnormal
co-host. Weird co-host.
No, I'm only kidding. But he drinks non-alcoholic beer.
Sure.
And he's a millennial.
I like to make fun of him, but I feel like that's not okay.
You can't do anything.
In fact, there's some really good non-alcoholic beers out there, and now some really good products made from wine that are non-alcoholic. That I have friends who are making some that are delicious.
All right. So, what's innovation in the wine industry today?
I would say that the innovation is really in farming, because you have this huge challenge. One of the huge challenges to the industry is climate change.
Right.
And so people have to develop farming tools and farming techniques that will sustain them through these really aggressive extremes of weather. And so people are, you know, in certain areas where there's a lot of hail, people are finding ways of netting that is not driving them out of business. Mm-hmm. So netting the vines to protect the grapes. Where there have been forest fires, it's been really devastating. I'm headed down to Chile next month to the south, where I love the wines from the far south, where there these very ancient vineyards, 200-300-year-old vineyards, and they've been wiped out by forest fires in the last week. So people need to find tools to deal with protecting their vines and to deal with protecting them from heat. You have a lot of people, I guess the biggest trend farming-wise is that even in places like Burgundy, you're seeing a classification that was based on where the snow first melted in the spring. And now the classification is based on where the coolest areas are so you don't get sunburn on your grapes. Mm. So you want a northern exposure suddenly rather than a southern exposure.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
It's so funny because I think Business Week has done some reporting too that just saying because of climate change, okay, so maybe you can't really grow here, but in this area where it maybe used to be too warm, it's a little cooler, where it was too cool, like warmer. So things are kind of shifting around the world a little bit.
Yeah, and then in those areas where you had moisture in the soil and that wasn't good for the vines, suddenly against drought, it's saving the vines. So all these places that were once secondary are now becoming primary. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the great vineyards are bad now, but the great vineyards are challenged in a way they'd never been challenged before.
Yeah.
So you can't rely on the fact that the vineyard is great. You have to know that the producer is really actively farming their vines to protect them from the grapes from the sun, to protect the vines from drought. You know, it's a big deal now.
It affects the vintage and stuff.
So we only have like a minute left, but I am curious.
And then we're going to open up some bottles.
Exactly. Awesome. So I really want to get to that. But, you know, innovation when it comes to farming. But when we talk about, you know, the decreased consumption among millennials when it comes to wine, are winemakers trying to innovate around that? Are they trying to reach out to those millennials?
I think that there will be, I believe that there will be a necessary shift in the way that wines are priced. Because when I was growing up, I'm an old guy now, but when I was growing up, I could buy Rumier for $25 a bottle at the store. Now that same bottle that I bought for $25 is $800. I'm serious, that's not an exaggeration.
I know.
And the people that are coming into the industry now, they don't get to taste those wines.
Yeah.
And they don't get the kind of excitement around the wine. I mean, we're showing you two really beautiful wines, but they're out of the budget of most people. So the industry's, I think the people who are going to be most successful in the next few years are the people who are going to be innovating on creating exciting wines, not commercial wines, but exciting wines. It's wines that will excite people at a price point that they can afford.
No, that makes so much sense. So we're going to open up, first of all, Josh, you brought some wine for us to sample and some champagne actually for us to sample. So we're going to open up. Tell us about this bottle that we're going to, that Stephen actually, who's in studio with us, is going to open up for us.
Yeah. So Stephen's opening the edition 243.
Oh, it works.
Of Roeder Collection 243. And what this is a completely new kind of wine from Roeder. So the two, we're doing this big event on next week, and the two champagne producers pouring at the event are both pretty significant houses that put vineyards first. So that's Bollinger and Louis Roeder. And what Louis Roeder did was their Brut Premier wine, which was their basic non-vintage Brut wine, they transitioned a year ago over to this collection wine. So what this is, that one's for you.
It is. First of all, can I just say, I don't know if you can see this, Ari.
It's generous.
It's generous and it's gorgeous, like the color, the bubbles.
Yeah. So this is the 2018 vintage. It's about 60% 2018 vintage. Mm. And then Jean-Baptiste Le Caillon, who's the winemaker and the viticulturist there, he started what he calls a perpetual reserve in 2012. So he started taking wines and putting them away.
Right.
So he's got 2018 vintage from his growers, and they're consulting with all their growers. Everything else that they make is from their own vineyards, but this wine is from growers, including some of their own vineyards, but from growers.
Okay.
And then they have this perpetual reserve, what they add to each year.
So there's a consistency.
And then they blend it into this, and then they have some wine from oak-aged reserves, and they blend it all together, and they make this wine, and it's completely a different style of wine from what Brut Premier used to be. Cheers.
You say wine, but it's a champagne.
It's a champagne, but champagne is a wine.
I was a little confused about that. Mm-hmm. Is it gauche if I call it champagne?
Not at all, because it's from champagne, but it's a wine from champagne. They also make still wines in champagne.
You know what? Go ahead. No, finish.
No, they make still wines in champagne, and they make sparkling wine in champagne.
You know what's really fun is I feel like champagne, at least for me growing up, it was holidays and celebrations. But you go now to a bar. I went to a work event, and that was the drink that they were initially kind of having everybody drink. And it's just you go out, and people are like, well, let me have a glass of champagne.
A lot of wine directors at restaurants, we're interviewing a bunch of them right now for a project we work on for our next issue.
Yeah.
And I was just interviewing Natalie McDade at Kraft yesterday, talking about what's going on at Kraft. And she said one of the things she's seeing is that people are drinking champagne as a wine for dinner.
Totally.
For the first time in her career, that they're not just waiting to have a celebration, they're having it at dinner, which is something that I love to hear, that she loves to see, and that many people in the industry have been waiting to happen.
Yeah, I see it all the time. I've done it.
Yeah, well, maybe this is just anecdata, but to the point that it used to be, or it still is, a celebration drink, I feel like I have noticed people order Prosecco when they're just casually out for dinner. Maybe champagne feels a little bit too serious, or, you know, too much of a celebration. Prosecco seems to have taken on this role as like, this is more every day.
Yep. And there's very commercial Prosecco, and there's also really absolutely delicious, very special Prosecco, very carefully grown Prosecco. So there's some really great wines in that category, and that's come up a lot. And I think that it's become extreme. It's really blown away a lot of the other categories of sparkling wine other than champagne. Mm-hmm. Champagne is continuing to boom, and Prosecco is really booming.
All right.
But what we did was Stephen brought some food that's going to be paired with this wine at the event.
Well, tell us about this food.
So this is Pizza Bianca, which is Robin Wright is the sommelier at the wine director at Chisiamo in Manhattan West. It's a Union Square Hospitality Group restaurant.
Right.
And
we've had that team over.
Yeah. And so she said that her favorite thing with this dish is champagne and sparkling wine. So we have them right next to a Prosecco, a Dami Prosecco, and right next to Roederer Estate, Louis Roederer Champagne. And so we thought we'd bring it over. We were bringing the Roederer. We thought we'd bring some
you heard that Katie was
Bianca
starving.
I can't starve.
We weren't going to let Katie eat until she had the champagne.
Am I going to eat on air?
You
Everyone's
going to
hear
can...
me chilling? I don't
well,
know.
I'm going to eat in a second, but I want to get to the second one because we've got about almost 3 minutes left here. So tell us about, you brought us another wine here, a red.
Yes, a red wine. So this
Which
is
I
Le,
love
this
reds.
Is Le Macchiole. So Cinzia Merli has this estate in Bolgheri, which is on the coast of Italy and the coast of Tuscany.
Right.
And she and her husband, who passed away, I think, in the early 2000s, he and she developed this estate and really found that Cabernet Franc performed so well in this part of Tuscany. So this is 100% Cabernet Franc. It is a very, I mean, to me, this is one of the great wines of Italy. It's a very beautiful...
I just wanted to make everybody know that we really do have the wine here. This is for Katie.
This is true.
It's a very elegant wine.
Yeah.
A very delicate red wine with a lot of richness underneath. So she's a very beautiful, delicate woman with a lot of strength underneath. I adore Cinzia. She's amazing. And she's, you know, after her husband passed, she really took it on herself to make this her project completely. Mm-hmm. And the wine has only ever gotten better and better and better. And she's one of the great producers in Italy now.
I just love what's going on. We've had, what were you going to say?
No, I want to get into like the scoring. Like you mentioned that it scores well in Tuscany. What actually comprises how a wine scores? What's the sort of criteria there?
It really depends on who's scoring it. For us, a lot of it has to do with our immediate reaction to the wine and what our expectations are for the wine.
Really gentle.
Yes, it's gentle and beautiful.
Yeah. But it's full. Sorry.
It's
lovely. Go ahead. You were talking.
I just want to taste it before I go on.
Well, and only got like 40 seconds left here. Tell us about this event.
So
Wednesday, February 15th, 6 to 8 p.m.
6 to 8 p.m. at Metropolitan Pavilion, which is on 18th Street, west of 6th Avenue. And this is our top 100 wines of the year, which we scored the wineries of the year. So these are the wineries that got the highest scores and the most highest scores. And so there are going to be wineries like Vega Sicilia will be there, which is probably the greatest estate in Spain. Corison and Diamond Creek will be there from Napa Valley.
This is incredible.
There are amazing wines here, like wines you won't be able to taste virtually anywhere else in your life. And it's a very reasonable ticket to get in. So we're actually, the tickets are going really fast right now. We're very excited about that because since the pandemic is sort of on the wane, people are out and about and really excited about going out.
I agree with you. Everybody wants to go do things. Josh, we have to run. What a sport. What a great way to wrap up our week. Josh Green, editor-in-chief of Wine and Spirits Magazine. Check out on Wednesday, February 15th, 6 to 8 p.m., Top 100 Tasting. This is Bloomberg.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.